Então, welcome Mayan Ofisi, founder of Beloved Yoga.
It's a thank you for inviting me.
Yes, pleasure to have you here. And so Mayan actually runs a very popular studio in the area of Washington, D.C., Virginia, Reston. And you also specialize in yoga therapy. You also work in hospitals as well as prisons and brain therapy and yoga therapy in the daily places where people reside and just make yoga more accessible. So I'm very happy. So Maya is personally my teacher for the past 14 years. I've learned a lot from her. So if you would like to introduce yourself and share with us a little bit your background and how you got to yoga.
Sure. Thank you. We are definitely teachers to each other on this journey. So my name is Maryam Avisi, and I'm Iranian-American and living in the area called Virginia, which is in the Washington metropolitan area. And as you probably have heard many people say in life, when they, with yoga especially, is this idea that yoga found me. And I would say that yoga found me maybe about 25 years ago. And the journey began really with curiosity and just a curiosity around one of my friends, actually, who was teaching yoga and kind of had stole all her furniture and just was like teaching out of her living room. And I couldn't understand like what was happening to my friend. And so I decided, let me take class and let me get to see what's happening. And that class, I remember it very clearly, that I didn't really know what was happening, but I knew something was happening. And I've always been a very, I believe in the care of the temple of this body that I've incarnated with and with its imperfections and perfections. And this practice really made a lot of sense to me. The philosophy took time and I couldn't quite wrap my head around it, but over time, I ended up meeting different teachers that opened up different doors. And 25 years later, I have a really amazing studio with incredible teachers. And I get to share yoga, as you said, both in clinical and as a yoga therapist and yoga teacher. And I have phenomenal teachers that I study with as well. And so I'm here. There's this word called Dharma in our paths. And Dharma, which is used so often in just our everyday, like mantra Dharma, become almost marketing terms. But the origins of Dharma is, and we have many Dharmas in life. Dharma, the beginning of Dharma is DH. Anything with in Sanskrit, the language of yoga with DH, refers to what something that is holding you or something that you hold. So my Dharma, what holds me beyond being a woman and a mother and a daughter and those labels, my Dharma is to also help alleviate suffering. And yoga happens to be a part of that work that I do in this world.
This is so lovely that you share that with us, because purpose, yeah, what is the purpose for all of us in life, and finding that true north and purpose, something very important. So to just give you an idea, Yachting International Radio obviously serves for the yachting community. So also the yachting crew, as well as owners, as well as the industry professionals. And we see a heavy rise on the figures and mental and emotional health, well-being, not only, but also physical well-being being these figures they rise. So there's more dis-ease, discomfort. And in this show, so self-care, it is quite timely to say that you have written a book, The Care of the Whole Self. And I think because being your student, and also you have taught me to be a teacher and a therapist, self-care, what does self-care mean in the teachings of the philosophy of yoga?
I think if I want to just take a big lens, is that culture in general, especially cultures that have indigenous roots, that is somehow connected, when you're connected to your ancestry and to your history, and if you go back in any culture, and I have a background in art history and studying history, there is a system of care that every society has. And indigenously, it is always multidimensional. What's happened in modern life is because maybe we elevate productivity, we elevate capitalist thoughts, we elevate individuality and these kinds of things. We lose sight of these models of care that are really important. And yoga is an indigenous wisdom of India that I am sharing today. And in this wisdom of yoga, there is a model of care called the eight limb path. And yoga is also with Ayurveda. And I don't want to make things too complicated, but Ayurveda is kind of lifestyle medicine. And so it's already this yoga path is already inherently looking at the care of the multi dimensions of the self. And I'm not, you know, this isn't the right place to explain all the layers, and I don't want to complicate it, but it's this invitation that yoga makes that, okay, take care of your physical, and then also take care of your breath, and then also take care of what you're eating, and also take care of what you're looking at and hearing, what's happening through your senses, and also take a look at what are you becoming intimate with in life? What are you choosing to attach yourself to? What are your attachments? What are your desires? What are your aversions? What are your obstacles? This is also the invitation that is part of self-care that is inherent to yoga. But I always just want to say that yoga isn't the answer for everyone. But if people kind of look back in their own ancestry, I believe they'll find that there's always been a model of care that is multidimensional, although our current society does not support it. It is a call to action that I believe we're both making to say we have to look at all our layers of care. And I think every community benefits from it, the yachting community included. And I think it's even more interesting perhaps in the yachting community because you're on a yacht. You're in a vessel. Like that is your ashram. And everything is in this little container, and it becomes like you face things in real time, and you can't like run away. And so I think it's even more essential to have some tools to know how to navigate, how to not lose yourself, how to maybe not lean into destructive self habits, which can lead to addictions and just the opposite of self care.
Absolutely, Paul. Thank you for addressing this. And so, as you mentioned, any civilization or indigenous ancestry includes a certain layers of the multidimensional being. Now, coming to yoga, where do you find it is very accessible for people to start? And how to actually adopt it in their lifestyle. So maybe if you look at, you know, I always revert back to the yamas and the niyamas, which is like how I live and how I have been buying to live, because you make it so accessible in modern life, how we can stay aligned within in integrity. So maybe you want to elaborate on this and yeah, give us an idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I will most of the time begin with the breath. That's the number one place that I invite everyone to begin with. And to get to know themselves is through the breath. And the breath gives us a lot of insight. The breath, if we hold our breath, if we notice maybe, and I'm not even talking about breath practice, I'm just talking about being in relationship to the breath. Like maybe we're holding our breath. Maybe we're sighing a lot. Maybe there's a lot going on with our nervous system that our breath is actually reflecting in real time. And this becomes something very tangible to look at, to then look at something that you've just mentioned, the yamas and niyamas, which may feel a little more intangible, which are concepts, which are attitudes. But this, the first attitude, the yama, is ahimsa, which is the attitude of cultivating compassion, inviting less violence into our life, making decisions that are creating more compassion and love and ease. And the breath, I actually find, is such an interesting place to see how I engage with myself with more compassion. Am I forceful? Do I even know how to use my breath? For example, the ideas around clarity and satya. So we have in yoga, we have 10 guiding principles that I like to call the principles of healing. Uh-oh. And in many eras of Indian thought, at some point there were 20, at some point there were 5, at some point there were 3. But in the yoga philosophy that was codified about, let's say, 1500, almost 2000 years ago, we have 10. And these 10 are major guiding principles. And I would just invite, the first 3 are essential for all humans to know, right? And the first one is ahimsa, the principle of doing less to doing no harm. The second one is satya, is truthfulness and clarity. And then the third one is asteya, which is the principle of not stealing. And all of these principles have many dimensions, from gross to subtle. So for example, not stealing may mean not literally stealing something like an object from a person, but it can also mean not stealing by not stealing from your sleep, by not stealing from yourself, by going to bed at a good time so that your systems can recover well, so that you can show up with clarity the next day and do less harm. And this is where often we need to have a teacher to engage with and a community, because this is very hard to do by ourselves and not intended to do by ourselves.
Absolutely. And I do understand that you're currently actually writing a new book.
Yes, yes, on these principles. And it's a little bit more for the yoga therapist and clinical work, but it's also going to be for practitioners. In my work that I work in oncology at the hospital, I'm amazed at the conversations that I'm having with patients around these principles and how helpful they are to navigate one of the most devastating diseases when you're at that stage 4 of metastatic cancer. There's a lot of contemplation happening, and these principles are deeply healing at that, especially at that point in the journey.
Absolutely. So, we don't see that a lot at the moment in Europe, as now in the US, that it actually, yoga can be implemented in a clinical way. And now coming to trauma, which is like something that I like to constantly address, because I do believe that trauma have definitely a source of disease, and we are actually unlayering every time the onion, certain conditioning and programming. If we, how we get triggered or act in society has a lot to do with trauma. So how would you see that from the lens with yoga?
Oh. So yoga's main objective is to lessen suffering. So anyone's listening to this program, you know, when you listen to this, if you are not interested in lessening suffering, then you won't be interested in this show. But if you're interested in lessening suffering, then this is where yoga is very helpful. And its only objective is to support the lessening of suffering. And what we know is that our childhood forms so much of our lens on life and also our impressions, our voices. And so one of the drivers in yoga to support lessening suffering comes from developing a relationship with our wise teacher inside, with the voice within, with that alignment with soul, with source. You can all call it very different names. And what trauma does, traumatic events or trauma we're watching or trauma we've experienced on an individual, collective, or family unit, is it can really sever and create distance between myself as a person navigating this world and that inner voice. And that severing of that relationship is what creates a lot of pain. In a text, I want to say maybe it's 1200 years old, it opens up, this is called Sankhya Karika, and it opens up with the statement. It says, suffering comes from three sources. One is from nature, like it's from outside of yourself. For example, just to connect us to the yachting, it might come from like a storm that is, you are in a ship and it's a storm, and that storm, it creates major suffering for the boat, for the people on the boat, and so forth. The second one is category, it comes from people. Let's say something happens on this yacht that is between two people, but it can be between you and a person, or it can be observed. Like you're observing something that's happening between people, among people. And the third one is within ourselves. That is also a deep suffering, is what's happening inside of ourselves, our inner dialogue, our self-hatred, are not feeling we're enough, and always trying to do to kind of find our worth. And where yoga steps in is it says we can't manage a lot, we can't manage nature. Like you can't stop that storm. You really can't stop what happens necessarily among people or what people do, but you can manage yourself. And one of the ways of healing from traumatic, little T trauma, big T trauma, healing from childhood trauma, is to gain power, is to become empowered, is to gain your power back, is to be able to say, yes, no, I don't like that. Yes, I want to do this. In the smallest moments of our life. You know, we don't have to become just so huge. Sometimes we have to do three jobs a day to pay for certain things, that have gas in our cars, for example. So that's the path. The biggest trauma is the severing of the relationship within myself, between me and my soul. And the healing comes from empowering that relationship to mend. And that's what yoga is interested in. To help us internally to build our inner strength so that we can navigate the ship of ourselves in this life and the ships that we may be working on.
Absolutely beautiful. I like how you actually able to connect this. And so the breath, that is the entry point. I think many of us are not actually connected to the breath, and it's something where we get disconnected from. And if you look at the generation, the next generation, and self-care, what have you observed so far? I mean, you see practitioners come in and go in the studio, and What do you see and what do you think you would like to share with them as a message?
So Gen A, which is like the new generation, I think they have certain advantages that the prior generations didn't have. There's so much about the breath available on social media. There's all these tools. It's in education. Mental health is like, you know, we have kindergartners saying they're depressed. I mean, not to say that that's right, but this is like we have the language of mental health issues in our culture. But what I find with my generation and a few generations younger than me is we didn't have access to all those tools. And so we're now like maybe hitting points in our lives where like, I'm so overwhelmed, I don't know what to do. And so the invitation is made through the breath. And I, in my little world of oncology at the hospital, and I only work a few hours a week, I would say easily 85% of my patients have never been taught about their breath. And I'm dealing with all age groups.
Wow.
And when I ask the question, how do you use your breath to take care of yourself? Most people say, I don't. I don't even know what you're talking about. So, but the younger generation, when we teach teens and the younger, they seem to know because they've been taught this in education. It's become more prevalent, at least in America where I am at. So the breath is like the huge tool because it is the main tool for your nervous system to stay regulated. And I bet you most of you that are listening, you do things unconsciously you're not aware of. Like you're going into a setting and you just go, you do a pursed lip exhale. You get yourself ready. You take a big inhale. Okay, I got this. We're doing this, but then to have a systematic little bit of a practice, 3 to 5 minutes a day is huge for your nervous system. That way you set up yourself with you set up to start your day grounded. It's essential.
So you and I agree. Yes. While we're saying this, maybe can you now share with us like a simple practice? So we give them one tool, and then a later stage, we will have a forum and we have more time to share tools of the philosophy of yoga. And there will be a self-care course, and I will invite Mariam to it. So if you maybe give us a little bit of a, yeah.
Absolutely. So if you're comfortable, I encourage you to sit up and just sit with the most comfortable posture that you're comfortable with. And I would encourage you to just maybe touch the sides of your ribs and kind of feel how far they go down. Just kind of be in touch. And this is the attachment points of your diaphragm. It's the lower ribs. You can maybe go to the back. Part of it attaches to where the thoracic and the lumbar meet. And then a part of it is attached to the sternum. But as we inhale, I want you to feel that when you inhale, your lower ribs expand and maybe let your arms open up and feel that your rib cage expands. And as you exhale, you can bring your hands back and just kind of touch the rib cage and feel it move in. And just repeat that. This practice is just to get to the shape change of breath. The breath changes shape. And I think what the statistics show is, let's say 1 to 2 in 8 people are reverse breathers. So I want everyone that's listening to first just make sure there is proper function of your diaphragm. So when you inhale, you expand the lower ribs, the diaphragm opens. And when you exhale, the diaphragm draws in and lifts. And the abdomen draws in a little bit too. And just continue. This is all natural. You shouldn't have to make too much additional effort. Exhale. And you're drawing in. Do one more. Just really study. As you inhale, are you opening? Are you expanding? As you exhale, are you able to draw in and feel that kind of hugging in. And then just let your hands relax, yourself relax. And I just wanted to say, if anyone's noticing that you are a reverse breather, this is easily remedied by practicing functional breathing, your nature of your diaphragm every day, a little bit every day. Women, athletes, and people that have been in the military are often the big categories of reverse breathing because of body image, because of what we've been told, especially women suck in your stomach. Athletes like to kind of power up and push through and all that training, and when there's intensity. And military, again, it's that kind of pull in and puff up energy of the military. Very normal to be a reverse breather. When you become aware of it, it's just time to start to address it. Because reverse breathing, sometimes called paradoxical breathing, creates high levels of anxiety. Yeah, and until you remedy this breathing function of your diaphragm, you can take as many anti-anxiety pills, you're not going to get to the main problem. So get to your breath first.
Work on the root cause, not just the symptoms.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And what I love about it is, you know, when I started practicing or learning from you 14 years ago, I was very, I like the science part. I need to understand. And this is really how you teach, because you're constantly studying. You're constantly studying. You have to prove with science. There's more than more scientific papers out there. So yoga is not just an esoteric spiritual practice. It's actually hard facts, hard science behind it, which I think you meet the people where they are at. You pick them up where they are at, instead of like going really too esoteric, because it does not necessarily work with everyone. So I could encourage everyone of you, just check out the online classes also from belovedyoga.com. And whenever you are in the area near Washington, D.C., it's worthwhile visiting this beautiful place. It's a huge space and it's fun. It's just fun, like also how you teach yoga and knowing also you're in good hands.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time and sharing. And we hope to welcome you again soon on this show. And I'm always happy to see you and to speak to you. And I always learn something new again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.